Just spilled water over everything. But it didn't rattle me. All right. On those days of the week when I am preparing for a sermon, it has become somewhat of a routine of mine on some days to take a break around 4 o'clock. And by that time, I'm ready for something kind of light, something that's not too taxing on my mental faculties. It doesn't take much to tax those anyway. But I'll go to my lazy boy chair. I got my little grouchy dog on my lap. And sometimes with a bowl of popcorn, and I'll watch Judge Judy. Now, Judge Judy, in my opinion, does a very lousy job of adjudicating the cases before her. She never listens to the defendant. She has her mind made up. But at the same time, the show can be quite entertaining. There is, after all, something rather delightful in watching an older, grouchy person yell at other people and scold them. But a couple weeks ago, I watched another popular TV show instead, one that also runs at the same time, and that would be Dr. Phil. And granted, I would not characterize his show as light and amusing, but sometimes the situations he deals with are, in fact, quite fascinating. On this particular episode, he had a woman who was accusing her ex-boyfriend of raping their 3-year-old daughter twice. The mother was filled with rage and hate and could barely see straight. Her mother was also on the show as well, the girl's grandmother, and was just as livid, if not more so. They were both adamant that the father had done this and brought with them irrefutable proof. The father, of course, he was on the show. He claimed that he was innocent and that the mother and grandmother were just obsessed with spite and hate. Well, at the end of the show, after dissecting all the evidence that had been presented, Dr. Phil turns to the two women and says, "I have good news for you. This little girl, I'm happy to say, was not raped." Dr. Phil was expecting them to express great relief, even joy. But instead, it seemed to only make them angrier. A bit stunned by their response, he said, "I don't understand. Your prayers have come true. As a parent, you should be happy to know this." Well, the whole thing was disturbing to watch, but it seemed that their hatred for the father was greater than their love for the girl. The truth, either way, was completely irrelevant to them. Now, this is certainly an extreme case, but I have to wonder if all of us haven't at certain times, in certain situations, been the mother and grandmother to a lesser degree. Try to follow me on this, if you would. For instance, we hear a report about someone we don't care much for, something quite troubling, and inside us, we actually find a certain kind of delight in the situation. "He will go down for this," we say to ourselves. But then somewhere along the way, that report either proves to be false or not quite as bad as it was first portrayed to be, and so the whole thing kind of fizzles out. We should be happy that no harm was ever done, that no crime or sin was committed after all. But instead, there's a little bit of disappointment, you know, a missed opportunity. What if Hillary really is innocent in all those scandals regarding her emails and Benghazi and the Clinton Foundation and all the rest? Would our response be relief? Are we hoping she is guilty? Would we want her to be found guilty even if she weren't? What if some of these arrogant liberal celebrities we've been hearing about, reading about, who have been accused of sexual misconduct, really are innocent? Would we be disappointed if that proved to be the case? Or think of a situation closer to home. I mean, fill in the blank. You could think of many. Regardless of the example, each of us have to admit that there have been times when certain feelings, usually a strong dislike for someone, has not only clouded our good judgment and objectivity, but has also clouded our receptivity to the truth. Sometimes we don't want the truth. We will sometimes say something detrimental about another person behind their backs that we know or strongly suspect isn't true, but we say it anyway. That's called slander, saying something false about another person, but we find justification for it somehow. Perhaps secretly, we want it to be true. We hope it is true. And sometimes we will listen to, with a certain degree of pleasure, something detrimental about another person that we know isn't true or strongly suspect, but we listen to it anyway. In those situations, we accommodate another person's slander and become a party to it. And we find justification for that as well. And perhaps secretly, we are hoping that what we are being told is true. To borrow a line from James, brothers, this should not be. We claim to love truth, to follow truth, to uphold truth. We will correct heresies and faulty thinking. But each of us can be a bit sloppy when it comes to what we say about others and what we will listen to and accept from others. Our commitment to truth doesn't seem to be quite as strong when it comes to stuff like that. Now, we are currently in a series I've been calling Lessons from the Proverbs. And for today, I need to follow up with the previous message that was 2 weeks ago and put a little more meat on the bones, if you will, when it comes to the subjects of gossip and speaking unfavorably about others. One of our members came up to me after that sermon encouraging me to draw clean lines. For us black and white people, they said, we just need some clear-cut rules on when something like that is sin and when it isn't. I wasn't very encouraging, saying that that would be very hard to do. Every situation is different. There are always, you know, numerous extenuating factors that have to be taken into account. But there certainly are some governing principles from the scriptures that would come into play. But there's no one rule or even five rules that can be used to decide what goes into the okay box and what goes into the not okay box. Well, this person knew that to be the case, of course, but was still eager for me to flesh things out a bit more for today. And that had been my plan, and I assured them that that was the plan for today. But before we get into that, first, a little bit of review here. I've got 5 points. These are all very important to kind of bring us up to speed, especially if you missed. First, the word gossip has several nuances and can mean different things to different people in different settings. It's a word thrown around a lot, and so when we hear it, it might be good to figure out how it is being used. You know, what do you mean by that? Number two, strictly speaking, a gossip is one who divulges secrets or passes on rumors. In divulging secrets, the problem, of course, is that one is betraying a confidence. In passing on rumors, the problem is that rumors have not been verified, and this could amount to the same thing as that of spreading of lies. It is for this reason that gossip is condemned. It is not so much that something negative is said about someone to someone behind their back, as it is that someone is spreading something around that they should not be spreading. And typically, behind the gossip, what often drives it is, on some level, an intent that is less than honorable. Typically, there is a malicious element to it. Number three, here in review, because the word gossip is often used so loosely, it might be better to implement words or phrases that are more accurate in describing what is actually going on in any given situation. Malicious talk might be a better expression if that were the case. Or divulging secrets, if that were the case. Speaking ill of someone, spreading false accusations, smearing the person, circulating rumors, and so on. And if what is shared is intended to be helpful rather than hurtful, then words like warning or reporting would certainly be the better way to go. And while we're at it, kind of on a sidebar here, the word slander, that's a popular word, and people sometimes use it in the same way they use the word gossip. But slander, however, actually refers to the making of false statements, saying something about someone that isn't true. And so that word can be used as well, as long as we used it with that meaning in mind. You know, behind my back, Peter might tell Mark that I became quite impatient with him for being late to the meeting. Okay, that would not be slander, for the statement would be true, all right? And it would not be gossip because no secret is being disclosed. But saying such a thing may still be wrong on another level. All right, number four on review, more to the heart of the matter, at all times, in all situations, let us make every effort to be at peace with all people. Let us therefore show charity in the way we talk about someone to someone. Ephesians 4:29 would serve us well in governing our everyday speech on such matters. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. You know, this thing about Larry that I want to share with George, is it wholesome? Is it helpful? And number five, a point that I was very eager to address last week, let us also be charitable toward those who say terrible things about us behind our backs. I spelled out a number of reasons why we should be gracious when others do this, but there's one that especially stands out, and that is this. We do have to own our actions. If we choose the behavior, we also choose the consequences of that behavior, including the reaction of other people. And so we should be far more troubled about what we did to cause all the talk in the first place than the fact that people are talking about it. You know, not wanting to feel the shame from others often serves as an effective deterrent to objectionable behavior. You know, this thing, you know, this is kind of what comes to mind when someone cuts me off in traffic. My first impulse is to get even with the motorist. And don't tell me you don't feel the same way, okay? My first impulse is to get even with the motorist. But someone in another car who knows me might see that, and they will talk, and it's not worth it. And so I only do that sort of thing now at night when nobody can see, right? So if you missed that sermon from 2 weeks ago, it's still available on Netflix and Amazon Prime, and it's still free. All right. So this morning, in keeping with the theme of being charitable toward others, I want to revisit the exhortation to be gracious in what we say behind people's backs. I was only able to say a few things about that last Sunday. And new for today, the need to be gracious to those being talked about when you are the audience of someone who is not so gracious. We have a responsibility when someone is telling us something disparaging about another person. And on each of those two points, quite frankly, I would guess you're not really going to hear anything all that new, but it would be beneficial nonetheless to just spell some things out. And as we will see, the Proverbs do just that. They spell some things out that we need to be reminded of, actually quite often. So let's begin with some Proverbs. Actually, I have six of them to start us off with. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. He who guards his lips guards his life, but he who speaks rashly will come to ruin. A wise man's heart guides his mouth, and his lips promote instruction. A man of knowledge uses words with restraint, and a man of understanding is even-tempered. Reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Okay? And I want to read through those again, and to help us appreciate the point, the counsel, the advice in each one, I'm going to read it first in the NIV again, and then from another translation. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. The heart of the godly thinks carefully before speaking. The mouth of the wicked overflows with evil words. He who guards his lips guards his life, but he who speaks rashly will come to ruin. Be careful what you say and protect your life. A careless talker destroys himself. 16:23, a wise man's heart guides his mouth, and his lips promote instruction. Intelligent people think before they speak. What they say is then more persuasive. 17:27, a man of knowledge uses words with restraint, and a man of understanding is even-tempered. The one who has knowledge restrains his words, and one who keeps a cool head is a person of understanding. And this one, 12:18, reckless words pierce like a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. There is one who speaks rashly, like the thrust of a sword, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. Back to the original slide there. All right, though each of these proverbs obviously have a wider application than that of saying something uncomplimentary about another person, they would certainly all apply to that. Now, hopefully, you noticed the common thread in each one. What is being called for here is what? Caution, self-restraint. Think carefully before you speak. Weigh it. Don't say anything rash. Don't be reckless, impulsive. Let your good sense guide you. This thing about Larry that I want to share about George, is it wholesome? Is it helpful? Whatever I'm going to say needs to be carefully weighed, carefully thought through. Is it wholesome? Perhaps. Perhaps not. Is it helpful? Maybe. Maybe not. Sometimes it is not only acceptable, but even prudent to say something negative about someone else, about someone to someone. All sorts of examples could be given. But we need to think very carefully about that. Think twice before you say it. Literally, think about it, then think about it again. So let's explore a little bit what that thinking process should entail. Some of the factors that should be involved in weighing what we will say and whether we should even say it. So the first one is motive. It's a good place to start. To ask yourself, do I have anything malicious going on inside me? Do I have something to gain in sharing this that would be less than honorable? Here are some proverbs that warn us about motives. 4:23 and 24, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. Or in another translation, for it determines the course of your life. Put away perversity from your mouth. Keep corrupt talk from your lips. Chapter 26, like a coating of glaze over earthenware or fervent lips with an evil heart. A malicious man disguises himself with his lips, but in his heart he harbors deceit. Though his speech is charming, do not believe him, for seven abominations fill his heart. 16:2, all a man's ways seem innocent to him, but motives are weighed by the Lord. So again, think about this, and then think about it again. Do I have something, anything malicious going on inside me? And do I have something to gain in sharing this that would be less than honorable? I mean, there's going to be a part of you that will say that you are justified in saying it, that your motives are not impure. And indeed, that may be the case, but it needs to be carefully weighed. It really does. Now, sometimes it is still prudent to share, even if the motives are not 100% honorable. Just kind of a parenthesis here. The 22-year-old next door is a nuisance, and you don't care much for him, and he is, after all, a registered sex offender. To tell the new family who just moved in across the street who have kids, well, that warning is certainly justified. The fact that you despise the creepy kid is something you may need to work on, but that itself is not a reason to not say anything. Now, this, of course, is an extreme example, and we are seldom faced with extreme examples. The point is, we have to plug our motive into the equation. Sometimes that will have a lot of weight, sometimes not so much, but it has to be considered. Part of the question, is it wholesome, involves the motivation behind it. Now, let me give you an everyday example of something that we can all relate to and is quite relevant when it comes to this, whether you're going to admit it or not. And it's called payback. Joe has been quite thoughtless in some of the things he has said about me. And so I don't feel quite as obligated to show restraint in what I say about him. Now, we, of course, would never say that, even to ourselves. But that doesn't mean that it isn't going on inside our inner workings in some way. To settle the score is a very strong force in each of us that we cannot dismiss. We have to be very careful. You guys know what I'm talking about on this. And not surprisingly, there are some proverbs that warn us about that very thing. 24:29, do not say, I'll do to him as he done to me. I'll pay that man back for what he did. Or use the word said. 20:22, do not say, I'll pay you back for this wrong. Wait for the Lord and he will deliver you. 17:13, if a man pays back evil for good, evil will never leave his house. Now, don't miss my point here. I'm not suggesting that any of us would be driven by some sort of bloodthirsty revenge that, you know, would cause us to willfully plot out ways to get even. Rather, I'm suggesting that opportunities oftentimes present themselves that expose our weaknesses, our vulnerabilities. I'm going to be weaker when it comes to showing restraint in what I would say about Joe than what I would say about Phil. And that's because I have no beef with Phil. And so again, part of that I need to think through this carefully process involves certain questions that you know, have to be asked of ourselves. What's my motive? What's going on? Do I have anything malicious going on inside? Why exactly do I want to tell George this thing about Larry? Number two, along with motive, another factor that must be carefully weighed is veracity. This thing I'm tempted to tell someone, is it true? Am I sure? If it's just a rumor, not yet verified, then I open myself up to the offense of spreading lies. I become vulnerable to committing the sin of slander. And so I need to be very careful here. Can I stand behind what I say? How accurate is my description? Is it an honest assessment, or is it biased? Again, a number of Proverbs warn us about this. 12:17, a truthful witness gives honest testimony, but a false witness tells lies. From 24 chapter, the 24th chapter, do not testify against your neighbor without cause, or use your lips to deceive. From 26, a malicious man disguises himself with his lips, but in his heart he harbors deceit. 19:5, a false witness will not go unpunished, and he who pours out lies will not go free. This one from chapter 25, like a club or a sword or a sharp arrow is the man who gives false testimony against his neighbor. 21:28, a false witness will perish, and whoever listens to him will be destroyed forever. And this one from chapter 6 that you're probably familiar with. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. Again, I think the issue here for most of us in this room is not that of manufacturing some outright lie about someone and then passing it on to others with the intent to deceive. It is probably more along the line of reporting an incident to someone that is slanted, biased, and doesn't paint the whole picture, which then puts the person being talked about at an unfair disadvantage. Or it could be something along the line of passing on information that you've received secondhand and are simply taking the other person's word for it. And the information, the juicy gossip, has not really been verified, but you pass it on along anyway, as though it is true. You know, it is these sorts of things by which we become a party to false testimony and slander. And so again, we have to think very carefully before we speak. We have to own what we say. We have to stand behind it. Those warnings about not being reckless with our words are especially applicable here. A truthful and honest report would take into account that the person being spoken about is not present and could very well have a different take on the situation or incident. A truthful and honest report would at least acknowledge that and perhaps try to represent the interest or position of that person. Again, this is what is involved in extending charity to those we talk about, if indeed it even becomes necessary in the first place to talk. When speaking about another person, it actually might be helpful to imagine that your words are being recorded and will then be played back to the one who is absent for his or her review and critique. If that were the case, would that affect what you say and how you would say it? And along this line, very important, we have to be very, very careful about passing on to other people our own assumptions about another person's motive. Talked a little bit about this a few weeks ago. This too can become a false testimony, making conclusions about why someone did what they did, unless that person has actually gone on record about it, voluntarily admitting his motives. Well, who are we to really know? Who are we to know his heart? And oftentimes, because we are rash and reckless, we assert judgments about a person's motive that may not be true at all. You know, I tell Kevin, the reason Russell refused to apologize is because he has an issue with pride. Or the reason Jack wants to lead the board is because he always has to be in charge. Or Susan obviously has a problem with authority, seeing how she has so many problems at work. Now make your own example. I mean, there could be other things going on, other reasons, and we have to allow for that. We don't know. We don't know the person's heart. Now, it's one thing to speculate about why someone did or said something so as to better understand what's going on, but it's another thing to make hard conclusions and ascribe ill will to someone and claim that we know their motives and intentions. And this, too, is to risk slander. It is to risk making a false testimony. You know, this is something I've really been trying to get on top of, but I know that it still slips out. It's just really ingrained in a lot of us. And quite frankly, this is something, if I were to speak frankly this morning, which I think I am, I've heard this a lot here in our own church from time to time. And it's just a very common thing that we're all susceptible to. And again, to quote James, brothers, this should not be. It really shouldn't. So again, veracity, whatever it is you intend to say about the person, you have to stop and weigh it. Is it true? Can I stand behind it? Think. And before you speak, think again about that very thing. The heart of the righteous weighs its answers. He who guards his lips guards his life, but he who speaks rashly will come to ruin. The one who has knowledge restrains his words. The heart of the godly thinks carefully before speaking. Is it wholesome? Is it helpful? If it isn't true, it certainly isn't wholesome. And if it isn't true, it certainly isn't helpful either. Number three, along with motive and veracity, would be liberty. I need to stop and think carefully whether I have the right to share what I am tempted to share. If not, then this would be a betraying of confidence, one of the very things that actually makes gossip gossip. We've already seen some of these proverbs in earlier weeks. A gossip betrays a confidence, but a trustworthy man keeps a secret. A perverse man stirs up dissension, and a gossip separates close friends. A gossip betrays a confidence, so avoid a man who talks too much. And from chapter 25, if you argue your case with a neighbor, do not betray another man's confidence or reveal another man's secret, is in another translation. Or he who hears it will shame you, and you will never lose your bad reputation. So the question is pretty straightforward. Is this thing I've been told or that I know that I want to share, is it private? I need to think about it. Is it private? Is it private within just a small group of people? Or maybe it's not private at all. I mean, things done in public, obviously, have no expectation of privacy. If during a church service, a member takes offense to something said in a sermon, verbally expresses his contention, makes a scene and walks out, that's only happened 4 or 5 times here that I can recall, but sharing with others what you witnessed would not obviously be divulging any secrets. You know, we all have to own our actions, especially those done in public. But to pass on information that was shared with you in confidence, with this expectation that it is between you and the other person and not met for public consumption, or perhaps something that took place in a meeting of a few people, then obviously you have to honor that trust. After all, you don't want to earn this reputation of being that gossip who is warned about in the Proverbs. And of course, what is being betrayed here is not so much confidence, but the person who confided in you. You are betraying that individual. So again, think carefully about all this before you speak. Number four, motive, veracity, liberty, necessity. The question here that needs to be pondered is simply this. Does the other person really need to know? This thing about Larry, I want to tell George, is there really a good reason to tell George? Well, maybe there is. Maybe it would be quite helpful to George, or in some way help others if George knows, or maybe even help Larry if George knows. All sorts of possibilities here. If it is necessary and or helpful, and motives are clean, and the matter is true, and the report about Larry will not unfairly be slanted against him, and there is no expectation of privacy, and all that has been carefully weighed, then it would be appropriate to share, perhaps even prudent, might even be the responsible thing to do. A couple of the scenarios I gave last week, or 2 weeks ago, could be examples of that. And we saw examples of this in the New Testament as well. And many examples. Not everything that is said about someone to someone is forbidden, even when what is said isn't exactly positive. And again, people have to realize that they are responsible for their actions. And this includes accepting what others will talk about what was said or done. But again, you know, for this morning, please hear this. We have to be very careful with all of this. Caution is called for. And if it isn't necessary or helpful, then why would you go around talking about it? Why? Fill in the blank on that. If it's not necessary or helpful, why would you go around talking about it? And I would think that this itself would indicate a motive that is less than honorable, going back to the first point. So, all those proverbs about warning us to not speak rashly or recklessly, but to instead weigh our thoughts carefully before we speak them, they are there as God's gift to us, God's guidance for us in this. They are there for our benefit. They give us wisdom from above. You know, think of the carpenter's rule. Measure twice, cut once. Same thing when it comes to our speech. Think twice, speak once. Proverbs 11:12, a man who lacks judgment derides his neighbor, but a man of understanding holds his tongue. Is it wholesome? Is it helpful? If not, hold your tongue. All right, now along with thinking carefully, we also have to hear discernibly. And this brings us to part two. Part two is a lot shorter than part one. But even as we are to be charitable toward those that we talk about, we must also be charitable toward those who are being talked about by others. So, multiple choice. When someone is telling you something disparaging about someone else, A, eagerly consume every word and encourage the person by agreeing to everything they are saying. Oh my, you don't say. Oh, how sad. That's so wrong. Or B, weigh things carefully and ask some responsible questions like, why are you telling me this? And are you sure about this? And the like. A or B? Wow, that was real hearty. It's a rhetorical question, obviously. Hopefully we would all say B, but unfortunately we generally do A. Generally we do A. At the very least, we should be asking ourselves, is what this person telling me wholesome to me as a listener? Is it helpful to me as a listener? In particular, one thing that has to be pushed is the truthfulness of what is being told to you. On behalf of the party being talked about, we are obligated to represent his interests. And again, he is not there to give his side. So, you know, what you're being told may not be an outright lie, probably isn't. But at the same time, there may be some biased reporting going on, probably is. It will probably not be the full picture, but only selected bits and pieces. And typically, that sort of thing is kind of obvious. And when we suspect that the other guy is not being given a fair shake, well, we have an obligation to step up on his or her behalf. Again, from the Proverbs. Isn't it amazing how much you can find in the Proverbs on this stuff? The first to present his case seems right, so another comes forward and questions him. This, of course, is a warning about forming hasty opinions that you hear. Things need to be checked out, verified. One needs more information before you can form your own judgment on the matter. In 18:15, the heart of the discerning acquires knowledge. The ears of the wise seek it out. There is a sense here in which we are obligated to play the devil's advocate, as they say, so as to be charitable to the one who is absent. This proverb, acquire information, you know, seek out the truth. That's the exhortation here in verse 15. A simple question like, are you sure about that? Harmless, innocent, non-threatening question, are you sure about that? Not only forces the other person to rethink the facts and accuracy of what he is reporting on, but you have given him in a subtle way a notice that you're not going to automatically buy into everything that he's saying. You know, I find that a little hard to believe has the same effect. And indeed, if things don't seem to make sense, well, to quote Judge Judy, then it probably isn't true. And depending on the situation and the tone, even more direct questions could be called for. Is it possible that you're reading way too much into this? And are you sure? That doesn't sound like the Susan I know. Or did anyone else hear Joe say that? And of course, context is everything. I mean, I've seen this lots of times. Someone is joking around and says something playful, and then that is lifted out of context and later passed on and used against him. You ever see that? A lot. We all have. Context is everything, whether it's joking or some other kind of setting. You know, context, the setting. And again, numerous examples could be given. As a listener, we, of course, have to use some discernment, try to connect the dots, read between the lines. A 17th century famous French cardinal, whose name I cannot pronounce, said, "If you give me six sentences written by the most innocent of men, I will find something in them in which to hang him." Does it appear that the person who is telling you this stuff is out to hang somebody? If indeed the report we are given is not true or is in some way misconstrued or doctored up, we would not want to be a party to the slander, even in the role of recklessly believing it. And so let us not blindly and eagerly accept everything that is said, and let us not encourage biased reporting by blindly and eagerly going along with it. On that very point, consider these proverbs. A wicked man listens to evil lips. A liar pays attention to a malicious tongue. What a warning. 21:28. A false witness will perish, and whoever listens to him will be destroyed forever. I think I missed one. A simple man believes anything, but a prudent man gives thought to his steps. Like a muddied spring or a polluted well is a righteous man who gives way to the wicked. All of these offer warnings, advice, and counsel on how to process reports that we hear about other people, including this one. Speak up for those who cannot speak for themselves, for the rights of all who are destitute. And this one. The words of a gossip are like choice morsels. They go down to a man's innermost parts. On that last one, I want to take a little time with that. We need to face the fact that we like hearing bad things about other people, especially those we don't care for. You may not want to admit that, but I'm telling you, we're all fallen. It is just true. And we have an appetite for this stuff, and we have a strong appetite for it. And given this, that should sober us. We need to be very careful with all this. We have to realize our vulnerabilities in this area. The inclination for this stuff is really strong, both the telling of it and the hearing of it. So, a quick summary of what we've covered in the last 2 hours. It's only been a half hour or so. Ephesians 4:29 is, of course, a good rule of thumb when it comes to extending charity toward those we are tempted to talk about. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs. It is under your control whether it comes out of your mouth or not. This thing about Larry, I want to tell George, is it wholesome? Is it helpful? Number two, numerous proverbs exhort us to think carefully before we speak, to not be reckless, rash, and irresponsible with our words. We need to think about our motives. We need to make sure that what we say is true. We need to consider whether we will be divulging any secrets and whether it is necessary or helpful to share. Number three, along with being charitable toward those we talk about, we also need to be charitable toward those who are being talked about by others. Let us realize that we are only getting one side of the story and are obligated to push back a little bit, at least, if we believe that what we are being told is biased. Weigh what you say carefully. Weigh what you hear carefully. So everything in these last, actually three sermons, could come down to the whole principle of charity. And in the last two in particular, we could summarize it as this. If you are talking about someone, be charitable. If you are being talked about, be charitable. If you are hearing someone else being talked about, be charitable. All right, that's it for this morning. We'll have Dave Stevens come at this time and close our service.